Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, The Weekend Reviews. Today's program is one that I've been wanting to put on the air for just over 3 years. It is a great pleasure to welcome the British band Stackridge to the airwaves. Who do we have joining us today?
Okay, this is Glenn from Stackridge. I'm going to pass you to Andy Davis. Here's Andy.
Hello, Simon.
Hi, Andy. How are you doing today?
Well, famously, really, yes. Beautiful day in Palm Springs. Surrounded by mountains. The show went well last night, so we're feeling pretty pleased with ourselves, I think.
Alas, you folks are not as well known on this side of the pond, but hopefully that's about to change. Can you give us a potted history of the band? I know that you have your roots in the early 1970s.
Yes, a potted history. Yes, well, our first gig was actually Christmas 1969, and then in about the 6 months that followed, we gradually metamorphosized into the lineup, the first lineup, sort of gathering people as they sort of wandered into Bristol bars and joined the band. Around the same time, Mike Cobin became our manager and he moved to London, and we started getting more and more gigs, and eventually we've got our first album with our first album deal with MCA, and then the following 3 years we went from that on to the third one with George Martin. And during that time, we sort of built up a huge following in Britain, although we never actually shipped many records. So we were sort of widely known and loved, but for some reason, nobody went out and bought our records in huge numbers. We had some lineup changes and carried on for another 2 or 3 years. And then the band split around about 76, and we all went off to do other things, some musical, some in different spheres, you know, and after sort of 25 years of songwriting with James Warren, who was also in the original lineup, at some point in the 90s, we started to talk about reforming, which we've done now, you know.
What was the catalyst that caused the band to have another kick at the cat?
Another kick at the cat. I can only answer that personally, really. It was because this is the only band, I think, where anything goes in the sort of four diverse styles of songwriting to be mashed together. We allow it in this band, whereas I don't think anybody else I've ever worked with is so sort of tolerant of that approach. You know, a band should have a style and a lead singer, you know, one lead singer, one blistering soloist, you know, but we tend to be multifaceted to an alarming degree, you know, so it doesn't follow the normal pattern, but without that, I think we'd all get immensely frustrated because we like to, you know, absorb influences from myriad places, you know, and sounds and artists and influences. So it's a special
I was fascinated when I watched the Forbidden City DVD, And, you know, as a reviewer, you know, I like to kind of pigeonhole things and people. And what I found with Stackridge was that you didn't really have a front man. I mean, you all seem to take turns.
Yes, we do. We got three lead singers. And I sort of liken it to more like a theatre group. Not an immediately obvious comparison, but I did a little bit of messing around in a theatre group called the Natural Theatre, and they have different creative guys in it, and women, of course. And when somebody comes up with an idea, if it's sort of voted through, then they sort of take the lead in that sort of that piece, if you like. You know, it's not quite as strict as that with us, but we've got sort of differing vocal styles, I guess you'd say. And the fact is, I probably couldn't sing one of Mutter's songs, and Mutter probably couldn't sing one of James's songs. And that's really the reason why we're, you know, don't have a recognised frontman.
It's just an unusual situation. Almost inevitably, you know, a band has a single voice, but you guys just go out there and do what you do.
Well, it's probably the reason. That very thing is why we were very successful live, because the show was, you know, entertaining and interesting from beginning to end, more like a sort of strange variety sort of thing. But on record, of course, it's a different kettle of fish, because it's, you know, it doesn't work maybe quite as well on record. I think our emphasis should have been, every time we went into the studio with a producer, let's concentrate on making this the cohesive, you know, the cohesive element is the most important thing to work on here. Because let's face it, our common influence is the Beatles, which is hardly surprising. But they were immensely diverse. But it was the fact that they always sounded like the same band that they could carry it off so well. Whereas we, I think, exaggerated our eccentricities and different influences. Way, really, of keeping ourselves entertained as well.
What is the current lineup of the band?
Well, we're an eight-piece at the moment. We've got four of the original members. That's myself, Matthew Slater on flute, Cron Walters, bass, guitar, James Warren, guitar, and mainly other things. And we've got Glenn Tommy on keyboards, trombone, and flute. Our drummer, Eddie John, is also a bit of a multi-instrumentalist. And we've got two violinists, Claire Lindsay and Sarah Mitchell. And there are basically four. There have always been four songwriters in Stackridge who sort of have an equal share of the credits, and various people in the sort of larger band, eight pieces as a whole, chuck in ideas as well. So it's a big, varied, you know, stew of influences. That's obviously need careful production and handling all this. But
I put it right up there with herding cats.
Yes, I wouldn't argue with that. Our life has been, you know, considerably easier since we met Chris Hughes, who's our producer now, who has several talents, but a knack of getting the best out of it, as I think, you know, and keeping us in control. I think that we're a remarkably sort of egoless bunch of individuals, really, you know, because over the space of the time we've been going, it would have been easy to for any one of us to sort of grab more of the limelight. But we've always been fairly sort of like a, you know, like a theatre company, sort of we sort of passively vote things through when they, you know, if they interest us musically, we, and the audiences like them, then they stay, you know. So it's an interesting setup, but it's, you know, better than one, you know, one lead singer writing songs with a lead guitar player, and you know, they all sound the same. We wouldn't
right.
last, you know, a week in a band like that. We'd all be bored to tears. You know?
Right. So what did the you know, the four main people do during their 25-year hiatus or vacation, shall we say? I mean, were you all involved in music?
Well, mainly the others went off and had children. James and I were the only ones that stayed in the music business full time, but that was probably only because we could, because we had fewer commitments, you know, and we went on and formed the Corgis in 1979, and because to exercise our pop sensibilities, you know, and also we thought it was about time we earned a bit of money. And James and I have been writing songs in some capacity or other ever since, all the way through that period, for various things. And during that period, he had his own band, I had my own band. I also toured with loads and loads of people like Tears for Fears and Goldfrapp and Julian Cope and Bill Nelson. And Crun formed his own building company and started producing children and dodgy buildings. And Mutter originally left to start to write serious music, as he calls it, which was in a heavily sort of English classical vein, I seem to remember, but sort of gradually morphed into a sort of R&B singer. So he's still got his other band. We've all got outside musical interests. I've got another band called the Three Caballeros, which covers all sorts of bases. So we all kept our hands in. You know, but James and I were the only ones that stayed in the music business full time.
I'll tell you what. Most of my audience is most definitely US-based, although I'm sure that today we have some listeners listening in from England. How would it be if I was to play a track? I have Boots and Shoes up. Would that be would that work for you?
That would definitely show our rock side very well, I think. Yeah, it's the first track of our album, our new album.
Okay, this is Boots and Shoes.
Okie dokie. Mike.
Bit about the track. I mean, whose composition was that?
That basically is my composition with James Warren. We wrote that quite some time ago. In fact, it was on one of the Corgis albums as well. We reinvented it for a Stackridge track. Because if there's probably if there's one thing we rarely dabble in, it's sort of straight rock. So it's nice when we've got a rocker to play, you know. So we thought it'd be a good idea to Chris Eve actually came up with the idea of starting off the album with a, you know, wham bam thank you man, straight ahead rock thing, and then entice the listener in later on with our more, you know, subtle compositions.
Right. Look, let's come right up to date. Right now, you're sitting in a condo in Palm Springs, California.
Yes, that's correct.
That is a very far cry from having a good pint of Moreland's Bitter at the Hare in West Hendred. The reason I mention that particular location is that's where I grew up. My parents owned it. how did you end up in Palm Springs?
It's a fairly, some would say, predictable happening with this band. It's always vast contrast. I don't actually know the answer to that, although it's, to anybody else it would be surprising, but to Stackridge, it's not surprising that about 3 months ago we in the same week I seem to remember, we had to cancel a gig in Yeovil for lack of ticket sales, and then got a contract through from CBS saying come play on the Late Late Show in LA. So that's about, you know, that's what life in Stackridge is like most of the time. So the fact that I'm sitting here in Palm Springs doesn't surprise me at all, really.
How did CBS discover Stackridge? Had they played some of your music?
Yes. Word came to us through YouTube and Twitter or one or the other, or both of those things, that Craig Ferguson was using one of our tracks as walk-on music for his live stand-up shows. Then that he's also used the same music on the TV show from time to time. And we found a clip on YouTube of his live stand-up. And sure enough, he had about maybe 2-3 minutes of one track as he'd walk on music with two sidekicks who mimed to part of the song, and before Craig's show starts. So somehow or other we got word.
Hello?
To his people.
We seem to have a minor communication problem.
Uh-huh.
Are you still with us?
I'm here, yes. I can hear you perfectly.
Oh, okay. All right. It just went deathly quiet. Okay, a question that I have to ask, because you can probably tell by my accent, although I live in Mississippi, I probably was not originally born here. How are you finding the U.S. beer?
You're talking to the wrong man, because I'm teetotal.
Oh, good Lord.
If you want to know what the band think of U.S. beer, I've got just the man sitting next to me to answer that question. Later. One of the other lead singers in the band, and co-songwriter and flautist.
All right. Let's ask him the question.
Okay. I'll hand you over to him. Nice talking to you.
And you.
Hello, Simon.
Hello.
Hello. How are you? All right.
So, I'm doing just great. So I posed the question. You know, I'm obviously not a native Mississippian. What do you think of U.S. beer?
I'd find a decent U.S. beer, to be perfectly honest. But then again, I haven't tried as hard as I might. I tended to resort to the tried and tested sort of Stella Artois in the English pubs. But I'm a devotee of stronger lagers. The beer over here is a bit too timid for my taste, really, for at least the ones I've encountered so far. But if anybody out there knows of any good ones to try, around 5%, and I'd willingly be a guinea pig.
I'm sure that you'd be willing to accept free samples.
Exactly, yes. Yes, you know, if my name is worth any, gives a weighty testimonial to any American beer, then I'm all too willing to endorse it.
Have you guys managed to do any sightseeing since you've been in the States?
Not on this trip. No, we've been getting over the flight over on the first evening, and then we had to sort of rehearse on the Sunday, because we had to we didn't have to, but we used an American drummer who was excellent. So we've sort of been busy. These next 2 days, today and tomorrow, are the sort of two furlough days, really. So we're in Palm Springs, and my wife has told me I've got to go up the mountain in the cable car, so that's me stitched up for tomorrow. Because if I go home and I haven't got a photograph proving that I've been up there, my life won't be worth living. So that's my touristy bit for tomorrow, is go up the mountain and hopefully come back down again.
Actually, that's a great segue for what I was going to ask next.
Good.
Right,
I
know the cable car quite well. But, I lived in San Diego for 10 years and used to go to Palm Springs probably every month or so. We had an office out there. And I was going to suggest to you that if you have wheels, preferably with a native driver, someone that understands the right side of the road to drive on.
We have actually, yes, we have got a driver who's chauffeuring us around, so which is nice.
All right, well, he would know this particular route. If you look at a map and select the most direct route between Palm Springs and San Diego, it takes you up a switchback road, and right at the top of the mountain there is a wonderful tourist lookout spot, and you can get a real idea of what Palm Springs is. And it's this little green oasis in the middle of a very large desert.
Ah, right. Okay. Right, I shall put that forward to the next committee meeting.
The other suggestion I would have isn't nearly as attractive, but it's a wonderful olfactory adventure.
Adventure, that's something I wasn't expecting to hear on a rock interview.
Okay. Right. There's a little landlocked salt lake called the Salton Sea. And I would definitely recommend a trip to a place called Salton City. It's the worst smelling place in the... Yeah, it's the worst smelling place in the entire universe. And it's just because of the salt.
All right, okay. Well, it could be worse. It could be a sewage farm, couldn't it?
It could. Okay. How about we play another track? Would you have any objection to Red Squirrel?
No, I've got no objection to Red Squirrel at all. No, you crank it up and play it. That's fine.
I think it's good in stews.
it's what? Orange stews. I had a picture of a red squirrel in shoes then.
Stews.
In stews, not shoes. Okay, red squirrel in shoes. Okay, stews.
Stews.
Yeah.
Stews. Yeah, yeah.
I bow to your superior knowledge on eating red squirrel.
Well, I mean, you obviously have never lived in Mississippi.
No, I haven't. No.
Okay, so it's red squirrel.
When the geese fly out, and we're all alone, living hand to mouth in the great unknown. Gonna be a showdown, just wait. Sit there, watch me get out of my tree. What's it gonna be? Like a potter's wheel or a three-amp fuse, like a Cuban heel or a 12-bar blues. Gonna be a showdown, just wait. Gonna stand there, watch me get out of my tree. What we gonna see?
Earn it one way.
when darkness falls. There's a place to go. Join a militant cell.
Our strength and be our problem, that we are we don't slip comfortably into any category of music because the influences are so wide ranging. Back in the 70s, I suppose we were may have been labelled progressive, but then we used to slip things like Do the Stanley, which is more vaudeville, in, and we had some poppy Beatlesque or Beach Boys type stuff going on as well. So we've always been a wide-ranging band musically, trying, you know, playing what we liked. As long as it's melodic and interesting, then we'd go for it, you know.
We have a lot of US-based listeners on this program, and I'm sure they will want to hear more. Where can people find your CDs and DVDs? Do you have a website?
Yes, we do.
On Amazon?
As far as I know, it's on Amazon. But if they go to www.stackridge.net, then everything's on there, all the information they want. We have our own radio broadcast programs on there. Not in direct competition to you, but, I mean, in our own little way, we have our own radio thing going on our Stackridge Radio. Steam Radio, and all the information about the products and the gigs are on that website.
Is the infamous Mike with you?
Mike Tobin is here, yes. Would you like to speak to him?
I would. Why don't you stick him on the telephone?
I certainly will, Simon. Thanks
nice to speak to you, and maybe speak to you again when we're over again. I'll hand you over to Mike. Hang on.
Okay, and I do hope we will speak again.
Simon.
Mike, how are you?
Simon, you caught me in mid-tweets then. I was on the laptop tweeting. It's what managers do these days, you know. It's a very different ball game.
Actually, once again, you have fed into what I wanted to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, marketing in today's world.
Yeah.
I know that you have a very active Yahoo group, Zorgan's Gal, I believe it's called.
That's correct, yeah, yeah. Maybe an explanation is due there. Zorgan's Gal, very strange word, but it's actually a character out of an early Stackridge song, so that's what it's named after.
I can think of very few bands that go to the lengths that you do to engage the fan base. Is this just a marketing tool, or is it more a reflection of the general band philosophy?
I would have to say it's a little bit of both. I mean, historically, way back before the days of the internet and modern technology, that is the band and I, always had a very, very close relationship with the fans. And, you know, we used to do a monthly newsletter, which we used to print out on one of those really old-fashioned printing presses where you had to wind the handle and you got yourself covered in ink and it took all night to do it. And then we'd stick them in the... We stick them in the post the next day. And so really all the modern methods are just a translation of that. And there is a genuine love for the fans and vice versa. We've always tried to treat them with respect, because without them, the band would not exist. But in this day and age, of course, you could be a bit cynical and say that's what everybody's doing now. And if you go to any of these music business seminars like I go to, both in England and in the States, it's hammered home time after time that because there's no more record shops left, and because everybody's downloading stuff for free, you've got to engage with your fan base and build it that way. Word of mouth, an old-fashioned term, but that translates into constantly being on the internet and Twittering and MySpacing and Facebooking and all the other applications that one has.
Hindsight's always 20/20, and this is a very unfair question, but I have to ask it. If you could wind the clock back to, you know, the first half of 1970, was there a way to prevent the band imploding?
Well, I mean, 1970 was right at the beginning.
Well, like I said, it's a very unfair question.
No, but I'm getting ready to answer it. As I fumble with my words, it's beginning to slot itself into place in my adult brain. 1970 was the very beginning of it all, and of course we were all very much younger, and there was absolutely no question that if there was a gig 500 miles away for a fiver, £5, then we'd clamber in a van and go there and sleep on somebody's floor for the night. You do that when you're 18, 19, 20, 22 years old, and indeed there's bands doing that all over the world right now as we speak. But that had no effect on whether the band was going to implode or not. I think the implosion, which was really sort of mid-70s, was a result of all those years of travelling up and down for little money in the vans, and sleeping on floors and so on, people begin to get on each other's nerves, and it's just inevitable. You know, you spend that amount of time together 24/7 in not terribly nice circumstances, it's bound to have an effect. So I think that was part of it, as unavoidable. And coupled with just sheer frustration that there was this constant barrage of publicity going on. We had what was then known as the music press, which no longer really exists in the form that we knew it, which was four or five different pop music papers published once a week, which had tens and hundreds of thousands of readers. Now, of course, that's again all done on websites and on blogs and so on, but indeed people like yourself. But you know, constantly Stackridge were being touted as the next big thing. That they were better than Genesis, they were better than Supertramp, they were better than Wings. And twice the band had their bags packed, ready to go to America, because that was the goal then for every British band, was to conquer America. And something always tripped us up at the last stage. So I think it was a whole combination of those factors, but frustration perhaps is the word that should be underlined three times. And that was sad. And a lot of people have said, well, if only they'd hung on for another 6 months, it would have happened. But alas, you can't turn the clock back. That's what happened. But it's really interesting now that you know, you're talking about a bunch of guys who are no longer young and foolish. They're still quite foolish, but in a sovereign old sort of way instead. And I can safely say that because I'm older than all of them. And so there's a different kind of mood within the band these days. And I think, as Andy said to you earlier, you know, that it's... You just sort of go with the flow. That's the Stackridge story. It just continues in its own wonderful meandering pattern.
We're about to lose our live listeners, but
yes,
the
okay.
recording the recording will continue. So I
okay.
do hope that you can stay with us for a couple more minutes.
Say 5 minutes at the outside is what we can do. We have some more stuff lined up for midday.
Oh, yeah, like pool?
No. More hard work sat in front of a computer and sat with the telephone to one's ear. You know, this is a really, really strenuous occupation, you know.
I believe it was sometime in 2007. I received a large box from a distributor that I work with. I refer to them as Clint boxes. Even the post guy, you know, when he's delivering, goes, "Looks like a Clint box." Yeah,
okay.
This is a large cardboard box with 20 or 30 DVDs in it. And
yep.
inside it was your DVD, the Forbidden City. So,
Forbidden City, yes. Right.
Yeah.
Was that your first ever experience of Stackridge?
No, it was the second go round. I flicked through the paperwork and I went, Stackridge? Stackridge?
Ah, right. Yeah, yeah.
Step back.
Yeah. As in a lot of people. Yes, that was a surprise for many, many people that suddenly there was that name again, which had been sorted away in their memories. Sweet memories, hopefully, but they'd sort of given up hope they would ever see it again. Yeah, that Forbidden City, that was a live concert, one of the first ones the band did when they reformed, in the city of Bath, the beautiful historical Georgian city of Bath, where they played for two nights in this small 100-seat theatre, little arts theatre. And we thought, well, you know, we should film this because it is... at a historical event. We had no idea that anything was going to go on and develop from that point onwards. And it was all old material. There was no new songs. It was a complete sort of back reference catalogue across the board, both Stackridge and Corgi's songs. And the band has moved on since then. I mean, because they've done so much more work since then, that it's a much tighter band and a much more interesting, exciting band, a lot more new songs. But that is an historical monument, that DVD.
Okay, I know that you know, time is rapidly running out here.
It certainly is.
Are we going to be seeing you back in the US? Have you had a good experience?
Yeah. Well, we've had for some of the bands, it's the first time they've ever been here. For others, they've been here with other bands and in my case, I've been over here many times on business and on holiday. So it's been a great experience so far. And we want to come back. We want to come back next year, and hopefully when the TV appearance is transmitted, we don't have a date for it yet, but it's going to be hopefully sometime in the next 3 to 4 weeks, then hopefully that will trigger some response and that there will be a clamor to bring the band back. And we will be talking to agents and venues and saying, well, there you go, you've already got a nice piece of promotion attached to this. Do you want the band? And we'll see how it works out.
Okay, I really, really would love to talk for another hour, but
yes,
obviously
indeed.
You have a commitment at the local bar.
Yes, we have things to do. No. There's no bars here. It's Palm Springs.
Look, there are bars in Palm Springs.
Oh, there are, but it means we've got to leap in the van and drive there. There's nowhere to walk. But we won't be doing that for a while. We still have work to do. Simon, we're going to have to say goodbye now. Thanks so much for your continued interest and the nice things you say about us. I'm afraid that I can't call Andy or Mutter back to the phone because they've vanished. I don't know where they've gone. I suspect back to the pool.
I do want to thank you all for talking with me today. And,
my pleasure.
And I want to wish Stackridge every success. You guys deserve it.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much. We'll talk again, no doubt.
Oh, I'm sure. Okay,
yeah.
Till next time.
Until next time, my friend. That's it.
Okay,
yeah.
Goodbye.
Speak to you again. Bye. Bye.
Bye.